Well, we turn once again to the book of Revelation, and this evening we come to the 12th chapter. We saw last time, you remember, when we finished the closing section of chapter 11, the seventh trumpet. This is the final trumpet, the last trumpet that the Bible speaks about. And the sounding of the last trumpet, according to the Bible, ushers in the end time, the raising of the dead and the time of judgment. And that's what we're thinking about last Wednesday. We saw that the end has come in the closing verses of chapter 11. And the kingdom of this world, the self-rule, the rebellious reign of this world is ended. Christ takes his proper place as king. He is the one who comes judging both his servants and those who are his enemies, rewarding those who are his people, destroying those who are the destroyers of the earth. And the last verse reminds us that everything is made plain in the end. The temple of God was opened in heaven, and there was seen in his temple the ark of his covenant. God explains to his people why things have been as they have been. Whether we will know everything or not, I wouldn't care to speculate. But we will certainly know enough to be contented that whatever God has done or not done in our lives has been for our best and for his glory. As the Apostle Paul reminds us in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, we shall know even as we have been known. We do not know lots of things in this world. We're not intended to know them, but there are things that God intends we should know. And that's what we are being assured of at the end of the 11th chapter. Now, because we came to the end and the judgment at the end of the 11th chapter, that means, of course, we came to the end of another section. And so when we come into chapter 12, we are beginning a new section in the book of Revelation. We've already emphasized that Revelation is composed of seven sections, each of which covers the entire Christian dispensation and looks at it from a different perspective, that's all. And so we come this evening to a new section, and this section runs from chapter 12, 13 and 14. At the end of chapter 14, as we're going to see, we come again to the end. The vintage of the earth is gathered. And then in the next two chapters, 15 and 16, we see the bowls of wrath poured out, the judgment of God upon those who oppose him. Then chapter 17 to 19 speaks to us of the destruction of Babylon, this present world. And the final chapters, 20 to 22, deal with the final section, again, the entire Christian dispensation, leading to the new heaven and the new earth. So that's the outline of these chapters. We've seen the first three chapters, the seven churches, then the next chapters, the seven seals, then these chapters, you remember, from chapter 8 to 11, the seven trumpets of judgment. Now that in broad outline is the picture that we have in Revelation. And if we keep that in mind, we won't go far wrong. We're not saying that everything that we're saying is exactly right. We make no claims of infallibility. But I do have confidence in this, that we're not leading you far astray. There are some interpretations, if you are interested to read some books, I'm sure you will find many books in Revelation which have an entirely different perspective than the one that I'm putting to you. And I would most strongly affirm that they are wrong, if I may be so bold as to say so. So here we have a new section, but we not only have a new section, we have the second half of the book of Revelation. Now you might say, well, that's obvious. The first 11 chapters are half of the book because there are 22 chapters in the book. And it's obvious that when we come to chapter 12, we are coming inevitably to the second half of the book of Revelation. But there is a slight difference that I want to emphasize. Not only is this the beginning of a new section, and the beginning of the second half of the book. But the second half of the book is the explanation given as to the events that take place in the first half of the book. We have been looking so far in these first 11 chapters concerning things largely upon the earth. We have seen, of course, the throne in heaven, so we have had glimpses of heaven. But basically the issues that we've been looking at concern the church, the experience of the church in the world, the progress of the gospel, and the opposition to the progress of the gospel in the world. That basically is what we've been looking at up to this particular point in time. But in chapter 12, we are given, as it were, a clue as to why is it that these things take place upon the earth. What is it that causes such opposition? Why is it that the church has to face these difficulties and oppositions and persecution, almost even unto death? And the answer is given in chapters 12 to the end, right down to the end of chapter 20, because it is here that we are introduced to the personalities who oppose the gospel in the world. We are introduced to the dragon. We are introduced to the beast. We are introduced to the false prophet. And these three personalities, as we're going to see in the next chapters, are the reasons why it is that the church is up against it and why the gospel has such a difficult time in the world. It's not simply that the gospel is a strange message and the world would prefer to believe something different. The Bible makes it very clear that there is a war taking place. And it's not simply a war between good and evil, impersonal forces of justice or injustice. The Bible tells us that there is a war between God and the devil, between Christ and Satan, between the true church and the false church. And that's what these chapters in Revelation 12 onwards are actually telling us about. And we'll see how this works out as we go through these chapters. Well, having made these general comments, we want to come to chapter 12 particularly. And I want us to think particularly about the closing verses. I want to emphasize our thinking this evening in the closing verses because they summarize so much of what we want to be talking about. We're going to be looking especially at verses 13 to 17. But in order to understand the content and the context in which these verses occur, we want to make some comments about the whole of the chapter in order to get the proper perspective and the proper context into which we are to understand what we're looking at this evening. So what are we, in fact, looking at this evening? Well, let's read again from verse 13 to the end of the chapter. This is in Revelation chapter 12. And when the dragon saw that he was cast into the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child. The woman was given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time from the face of the serpent. And the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away of the flood. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth, and swallowed up the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth. And the dragon was wroth with the woman, and went to make war and with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of God, and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. Now that's rather strange language, and someone coming to that fresh would wonder, what is this really all about? Well, this is a very pictorial chapter, like the other chapters. Indeed, chapter 11 that we're looking at, it's a kind of picture book. The book of Revelation has been described as God's picture book. And I think that's rather an interesting and accurate description, because we are given a series of visions. And there are different colors, there are different numbers, there are different personalities that we meet. And it's evident that we have here a series of pictures in symbolic form giving to us great truth concerning the way that God deals with his people in the world and in the way that he deals with those who oppose his people in the world. So this is something that we should understand clearly, and we should recognize and be convinced as to the meaning of these different pictures. because they are not arbitrary. They are not just, as it were, some kind of ad hoc vision. John is telling us of things that he actually saw. The message of the Bible is not meant to confuse us. It's meant to clarify issues. It's meant so that we can understand it. And the difficulties of present-day interpretation of the book of Revelation is because we have abandoned, in fact, the early church's view of the book of Revelation. And I'm not saying that the early church had the view exactly that I am presenting to you. But what they did have was a view that was more akin to what I'm presenting to you than many of the aberrant views that we have down through the ages and to this very day. So what is this chapter all about? Well, let's look at the chapter as a whole in order to understand the meaning of these verses that we're considering this evening. The chapter is divided up into a series of pictures. In the opening two verses, we have a picture here of a woman who is in travail and just about to give birth to a child. Now, we don't have time this evening to go into all the details concerning the description that is given of the woman. A number of years ago, 15 years ago or so, I preached through the book of Revelation, and I spent 5 weeks looking at this one chapter. Now, we're not going to go into that kind of detail this evening, but we are going to make the point that it is evident that what we have here in the opening two verses is a picture of events leading up to the birth of the Lord Jesus Christ. We're back again, you see, at the beginning of the Christian era. And taking that as the general theme of these verses, we have the picture of the woman as the church. The woman here is the church. It is the church before the coming of Christ. She is portrayed as a woman, but out of this woman is going to come the Christ. And the church is in trouble. She is in travail. She is waiting until the time should come when she should have this child. And there is no question whatsoever that this is referring to that period in history when the people of Israel were waiting for the coming of Messiah. Messiah was to come out of Israel. And in that sense, there are many places in the Old Testament where the people of Israel are likened unto a woman, and she is in travail until the fulfillment of her time comes. And that really is all that John is saying concerning this vision. It is a woman. She has a certain glory. She has the stars of heaven, the sun. She's clothed with the sun, and so on. It's a picture of the glory of the Christian church. And out of this Christian community, the pre-Christ community, the Son of God is going to be born. So that is really what the picture is all about. And then in verses 3 and 4, we have a picture not only in the opening verses of the child who is going to come, that is evidently Christ, as we're going to see from verse 5, but we also have the idea that there is this dragon, this great red dragon, and he is having 7 heads, 10 horns, 7 crowns upon his head, and his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven. Now this is in fact Satan, as we know from verse number 9. We'll come to it in a moment. He is described, the great red dragon is Satan, he is the devil, he is the great serpent. So here we are being reminded that the devil has always opposed the coming of Christ into the world. And we do know that when Christ was born, the devil tried to destroy him. Herod, you remember, tried to destroy all the male children who were in Bethlehem and its surrounding environs because he had heard that one of these little baby boys was, in fact, the Christ, the King of the Jews, and he was going to seek to put to death. Hendrickson, in his commentary on this passage, has quite an interesting narrative of the times in the Old Testament, for example, when the people of God were almost persecuted out of existence, and there was a great attempt made to prevent the coming of the greater Son of David. And Hendrickson's interpretation is quite accurate in my view. So here is a picture of the great dragon, and as soon as the child is to be born, he is ready, as it were, to destroy him and to put him away. He is determined to destroy the church or to destroy the Christ as soon as it was born. And then in verse number 5, we have a picture from verse number 5 onwards. We have a picture of the birth of Christ and the victory of Christ. She brought forth a man-child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up unto God and to his throne, and the woman fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared of God, that she should feed, that they should feed her for there 1,260 days. Now, this picture of Christ is not concerned in verse number 5. This is not concerned with emphasizing the suffering of Christ. The book of Revelation is more concerned with the victory of Christ. And so when we're told here that she has a man-child who is to rule all the nations, we're immediately taken away from the humiliation of Christ in his birth and in taking flesh, and we are being reminded of the victory that he has won. He has come into the world in order to subdue all the nations. We were commenting on that last time, you remember. And he was caught up unto God and to his throne. So the whole of the suffering of Christ is bypassed, and we are led immediately into the glory, the sovereignty, and the ultimate victory of Christ. And God has taken him up. The devil cannot destroy Christ. And God has raised him up and given him glory. The New Testament makes that very clear in quite a number of different places. Wherefore God has highly exalted him and given to him the name that is above every name. And then from verse 6 we are told of the victory that comes to God's people through Christ. The woman fled into the wilderness. Here again we have the picture of the church. And she has a place prepared of God that they should nourish her 1,260 days. And so here again there is this victory. And then we're told in verse 7 to 9, we're told of the war in heaven. And here is again a summary pictorial representation of the defeat of Satan. He is cast out of heaven. His angels are cast out with him. The dragon fought and his angels, and they did not prevail. Neither was their place found any more for them in heaven. The great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole earth. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. So here we have the birth of Christ, the victory of Christ, the victory of the church through Christ. The woman is not destroyed, her son is not destroyed, and Satan himself is destroyed in the conflict that he engages in with Christ and the angels, Michael and the angels. So this is the picture that is being presented. And then from verse 10 to 12, we have again a reminder of the victory of God's people in this present world. They already have the victory in Christ. It's important for us as Christians always to remember that in our Christian life, we are not striving for the victory. We are striving from the victory. The Christian life is not in order to win. The Christian life is lived because we have already won. And I think half the battles of the Christian life would be resolved and done away if we could only grasp that we already do stand on victory's ground. Sometimes the Christian faith, tragically, I think, is misrepresented as though we were having to struggle for salvation. We do not have to struggle for salvation. Christ has procured salvation for all who believe in him. And those of us who are struggling for Christ's service and sanctification, and that we're not struggling for salvation. We are struggling to be faithful. The dragon, the false prophet, the world, the beast, they're all against us. The flesh is against us. But nonetheless, the victory, the certainty of salvation is not in doubt. That is not an issue for the people of God. There are other issues. But the issue of our salvation is no longer in doubt. The victory has already been accomplished. And this is where we have to see the biblical emphasis. And that's what this book of Revelation is all about. I am he. I was dead, but I'm alive forevermore. And Christ is in the midst of his people as the ever-living victorious Christ, as we've already seen in chapter 1. Christ in the midst of the seven candlesticks. So here again we have a picture from verse 10 to 12 of the victory of the church. I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now is come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accuses them before our God day and night. He accuses us as much as he cares. It doesn't make any difference. The victory is ours. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. And they loved not their lives unto death. Therefore rejoice, ye heavens, and ye that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil is come down unto you having great wrath, because he knows that he has but a short time." Now that is the general background. It is a completed picture. And what we have in verses 13 to 17 is a kind of recapitulation, bringing it, as it were, right up to date to verse 17, where the dragon goes and makes war with the seed of the woman, the remnant of her seed. That is, those of us who are Christians, who keep the commandments of God, and we have the testimony of Jesus. So here we have a picture of a completed victory, but nonetheless, there's a struggle on our part, because the devil is making war against us also, as he made war against the woman, as he made war against the Christ, so he makes war against all the seed of the woman. And you and I, if we are believers tonight, we belong to the seed of the woman who is being spoken of here. So that's the general background. Well, what are these verses 13 to 17 emphasizing? Well, first of all, they're emphasizing something about the dragon in verse number 13, and the serpent, as he is described in verse 15. In verse 13, when the dragon saw that he was cast into the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child. And we're told of how the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away of the flood. Now, what does all this mean? Well, here we have the dragon and the serpent. And we're told that he was full of wrath. He knows in verse number 12, the devil has come down unto you having great wrath, because he knows that he has but a short time. You see, one of the things that the book of Revelation is emphasizing is that the devil is one who is, as it were, in his death pangs. He is still struggling, but the death blow has already been delivered to him. He is dying. And what we have are the remains of his final efforts before he finally is destroyed, as we're going to see later on in the closing chapters, how God deals with the dragon and the beast and the false prophet. They are all destroyed in the end. But here we are being reminded that the devil already knows that he is destroyed. You remember how in the ministry of our Lord Jesus Christ, the demons said, "Have you come to destroy us before the time?" They knew that time for them was short. And they were saying to Christ, it's not time yet. We still have a little time. The word for time here is the word for time, and it is the word for ordinary time. And so the devil knows that his time is short. And so he goes about, so to speak, as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. And in verse number 15, we are reminded of how it is that he tries to destroy the woman. By casting this flood of water, the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood. Literally, it is a river of water. Water as a river. After the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away in this river of water. The scholars have differed a great deal among themselves, obviously and naturally, I suppose, as to what is the significance of this river of water. And I think, again, the best commentaries, Hendrickson and others, they take the view that here are all the lies, here are all the falsehoods, the false religion, the false politics, all the deception and the delusion that the devil casts, not only into the world, but into the church, and seeking to destroy the integrity of the church. Seeking to destroy its assurance, seeking to destroy its witness, seeking to undermine the integrity of God's people in the same way that a flood of water would come and undermine the buildings, the foundations of a building. That's the kind of picture. And this is the biblical explanation. It is the God of this world as it were, blinds the minds of those who do not believe the gospel. Satan can come in. Churches can sometimes become so, as it were, infiltrated that they become almost a synagogue of Satan, as we've seen in one of the churches in the early chapters in the book of Revelation. And so here we have the devil pouring out lies and deception, seeking to confuse God's people. Tragically, sometimes he does. But he never confuses God's people ultimately. You remember how our Lord Jesus Christ reminds us in Matthew 24 and Mark 13 how there are going to be these false prophets, and lies, false messiahs are going to come. And they're going to be able to perform signs and wonders that if it were possible, they would deceive even the very elect. But you see, the Lord is saying they can't deceive the elect. The elect of God may be deceived on many issues. There are many secondary issues on which God's people, quite frankly, are almost blinded and confused. And the sacraments are some, perhaps forms of church government, perhaps even forms of worship, and all these different things. But on the issue of salvation, on the issue of the reality of the death and the resurrection of Christ, the work of Christ and the word of Christ inscripturated, the Christian community is not deceived concerning these things, because God has given to us wisdom and enlightenment. And so the devil, as it were, tries, so to speak, to drown the woman with a flood of confusion and delusion, but he cannot do so. But there is this interesting reference here to the earth helping the woman in verse number 16. The earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood, which the dragon cast out of his mouth. And this is an interesting reference, and again the commentators make the point that where the church does not swallow the lies of the devil and is not swept away with the delusions, the earth is. The New Testament, indeed the Old Testament as well, speaks of idolatrous people who know not God as blinded nations, though all the gods of the heathen, they are idols dumb who blinded nations fear. And those who don't see God's hand in creation, it's because they're blind. They cannot see it. They just don't see it. The God of this world has blinded them. And so while it is true that the devil's lies are never ultimately going to destroy the church, they do destroy the world. And the Apostle Paul reminds us in 2 Thessalonians, you remember, that before Christ comes, the whole world, which doesn't believe in the gospel, that they should believe a lie. And the terrible tragedy is that multitudes of our fellow human beings today in the world, they believe lies. They believe lies about Islam when they say that it's the only way to God. That is a lie, according to the scriptures. All the other religions and isms, these are lies, according to the Bible. The doctrine of evolution and materialistic and naturalistic creationism, these things are not true, not according to the Bible, you see. But the world swallows them up as though they were true, and the world will live and die in these deceptions and delusions. But there's another way in which sometimes the world, even, or the earth, helps the woman. And that is that even the world sometimes calls a halt. The devil would do his worst. Indeed, the devil would do things to the Christian community that would shock the world. And sometimes the civil magistrate has actually come to the rescue of the Christian church. Sometimes we know from the book of Acts, for example, and I'm sure I've pointed out to you before, Roman authorities, on the whole, in the Acts of the Apostles, show up quite well. There is a system of justice, and the Apostle Paul could appeal to Caesar. Otherwise, he would have been handed over to a mob which was bent on his destruction, but he could appeal to the worldly power. And the Bible has a great deal to say about human government. It does control the mob, and it does keep peace. Mussolini, he did make the trains in Italy run on time. And for all that Stalin was a monster, nonetheless, he did drag feudalistic Russia up into the modern centuries. And so there's a sense in which the world, in all its badness, isn't totally given over to badness. And even some of Richard Dawkins' friends, for example, who share his view on evolution and who do not believe in God, some of them are standing apart from him and saying, we don't go as far as that. I know of one man who is not a Christian, he is not a theist, but he says that he doesn't want Christianity to disappear from the face of the earth. He recognizes that Christianity in the world is a good thing. And so there are times when even the world will not allow Satan to do to the church what Satan otherwise would desire to do to the church. And sometimes the world has a kind of natural sympathy, a kind of natural sense of justice, that it's not fair to treat people like that just because of their strange beliefs. And so the earth sometimes does. It swallows the lies. But there are times when it also is a help to the woman who is being persecuted by the dragon. And this is how I think in general we're to understand what is being said here. So we have the picture here of the dragon persecuting the woman. The second part of this picture this evening is the woman herself. We're told to the woman in verse 14, to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time from the face of the serpent. Now, what is the significance of the woman fleeing into the wilderness, given the wings of a great eagle? And what is this strange reference here to time and times and half a time? Well, here we are being reminded that the woman is fleeing away from the dragon in order to find safety. She is fleeing to a place that is prepared for her. To the woman were given the wings of a great eagle that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place. You see, the church of Jesus Christ in this world is in its healthiest condition when it is in a kind of a wilderness situation. The Christian church loses its impetus, it loses its salt, when it becomes too much involved in the world that has been deceived by the dragon. There are times when the Christian church needs to turn its back upon the world and get out of the world and stop living like the world and go into a kind of wilderness. And if necessary, have not too much to do with the world, because that's the devil's domain. That is where darkness reigns. And this is the picture. The woman has a place in God's economy in this world, but it's not a worldly place. It's not the city. It's not Babylon, as we're going to see in another chapter. The Christian church doesn't belong to Babylon. In chapter 18, the church is told to come out of Babylon, come out from among her. Don't be like the world. Come out from Babylon. And in the same way, we are being reminded of the same thing here. She has been given two wings of a great eagle. You remember how way back in the book of Leviticus, and again in Deuteronomy chapter 32, we're reminded there of how God took his people on eagle's wings and he led them into the desert or through the desert. It was on eagle's wings. You remember how at the end of Isaiah chapter 40, those who wait upon the Lord, they will mount up like eagles. They will, as it were, soar up. What is the picture that is being presented? It is the picture of being taken up above the troubles of this present world. You see, we have got other things to think about other than the change of politics and the new prime minister and the significance of whether she's a male or a female. These things may well be interesting for those who are absorbed, but for Christian people, these things are, it's just old. There's nothing new under the sun. Things come and go. She'll have her day and then she'll be no more, like every other one before, and those who will come after. And so the politics of the day are not the place where we've to be overmuch involved. We are tied up on eagle's wings. In the same way as the eagles, they soar up on their strong wings. That's the picture. It is a great predatory bird, and it is one which soars high and strong. That's the picture of God's people, you see. And it's a picture of God's grace. I have carried you on eagle's wings, the Lord says to Israel in the time of the Exodus. And so she is given a place that is away from the devil's influence. She is given wings like an eagle to carry her up, to soar up, and not become weary with the life of grace. And then we're told she is nourished there for a time. She is nourished. You see, for the Christian church to go into the wilderness is not to go into a place of starvation, a place of emptiness and need. It is to go to the place where God nourishes his people. And it is interesting how God commands his people to come apart. Our Lord Jesus Christ told his disciples to come apart. There are times when you and I need to come apart. John in the book of Revelation, you remember, in one place is told, come up hither. In others, come up from the world. John was in Patmos. Don't be overmuch anxious about Patmos. Come up, and I will show you things that are heavenly things. That's the picture, you see. It's symbolic, but nonetheless it is full of significance. And this reference here to the time factor. She is nourished for a time and times and half a time from the face of the serpent. Now, where have we come across this expression time and times and half a time? Well, I'm sure if you paid attention to our reading in the book of Daniel, chapter 12, there, verse 7, there's a reference there, a strange reference to times and times and a half. What is this time, times and half a time? It's 3.5 years. A time is 1 year. Times 2 years. Half a time is half a year. And we're back again to this same mysterious number that we've already come across. 42 months, you remember, in chapter 11. We're told that in verse 2 of chapter 11, you remember the city of God, or the people of God being secured, the holy city, they shall tread underfoot 42 months. And then in verse 3, you remember the two witnesses that we're looking at, verse 3 in chapter 11. And God gave them power unto his two witnesses that they shall prophesy 1,260 days, clothed in sackcloth. We have the same thing here in chapter 12 at verse number 6. The woman fled into the wilderness where she has a place prepared of God that they should feed her there 1,260 days, 1,260 days. That is 42 months at 30 days a month. And it's the same time. It's 3.5 years. It's a broken, troubled time. Undoubtedly, the symbolism comes from that terrible time in ancient Israel. You remember when there was no water, there was no rain upon the earth. Elijah prayed that it would not rain for 3 years and 6 months, a time of trouble for God's people, reminding us that the whole of the Christian dispensation, from the first coming to the second coming of Christ, it's a time of trouble for the church. It's a time of difficulty. But it's not a time of destruction or pessimism. It is a time of nourishment, it's trial, it is temptation, it's opposition from the dragon, from the beast, and from the false prophet. But the church is secure. It cannot be destroyed because God nourishes it. God raises it up, and God sets the times appointed. And 3.5 years is a symbolic period of rather a short period of time, actually. 3.5 years is not much. And what we are being reminded is what Jesus tells us in the last chapter in the book of Revelation. I'm coming quickly, not immediately, but soon. And when he comes, it won't be long delayed. So this world for the Christian is not going to go on forever and ever and ever. The devil knows he's a short time. You and I as Christians, we too should know that we have a short time. The sufferings of this present time, they only belong to this present brief time. And when this brief time is over, the sufferings also are over. That is what is being presented here. The coming of Christ, the victory of Christ, the church of Christ in the world, troubled, tested, but secured and guaranteed of ultimate glory. And then finally, verse 17, the dragon was wroth with the woman and went to make war with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of God and of the testimony of Jesus Christ. Who are the remnant of her seed? Well, you and I belong to the woman. We belong to the true Israel of God. We are incorporated into God's Israel through faith in Jesus Christ. The dragon knows that he cannot destroy the woman, the church, but nonetheless he will trouble the church by troubling individuals within the church. He turns his attention not away from the woman at large, the body corporate, we might say. And he turns his attention to the seed, the individual children of the woman. That means you and me. And we are characterized as those with whom he makes war. This isn't some little criticism now and again, some little scowl, some little falsehood, some little skirmish, some kind of a shot that once given is never given. It's warfare. And there are many battles and many skirmishes and many shots in war. It is a continual battle. And he is unrelenting. He goes deliberately to make war on God's people. And that's why the scripture describes him as one who goes about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he can devour. That means eat up, destroy. So let's be very clear about it. The events that take place in the troubles of the church are not just because the world is awkward and we are awkward. It is because, according to chapter 12 onwards in the book of Revelation, there is such a one called the Great Red Dragon. He is called the Devil. He is called Satan. He is called the Serpent. He is called the Accuser of the Brethren. And he has assistants, and we're going to see them next week, the Beast and the False Prophet, the False Church, and the Beast, the world, all around us. He has assistants in this warfare. But the reason that you and I are a trouble or troubled by him and a trouble to him is described here in this twofold way. We keep the commandments of God, and we also have the testimony of Jesus. If we don't keep the commandments of God, then the devil's not particularly interested in us, except as one whom he already has blinded. And so here we are being reminded again that the moment we stand up for Christ and obey the commands of God and stand for the law and the gospel, we're going to find ourselves up against it. Don't be surprised at the fiery trial. And having the testimony of Jesus means we bear witness to Jesus. And the more we bear witness, the more we are going to be at war with the devil and the devil with us. That's the picture, you see. And this chapter, therefore, in this rough outline, is presenting to us the whole of the Christian dispensation. It's always going to be like this. It was like this before Christ was even born. The dragon was there ready to devour and destroy the child, just waiting. And the woman was in travail even before the child came. She was troubled by the dragon then. That's the picture. And until the end of time, it's going to be the same. But we, as the children of God, are with the woman in the desert. We're carried by eagle's wings. We're given nourishment. We are taken into the desert where God has prepared a place of blessing for those who obey his commandments and bear the testimony of Jesus Christ, his Son. That's what this chapter is all about. I know it's been quick, it's been desultory, but that is the picture that is presented to us. And we are going to understand the rest of the book of Revelation in the light of this general overview that this chapter is speaking about. It is the explanation as to why troubles come to us as Christians. May God bless his word to us.